The song that we sang before the reading was certainly appropriate because we are here because we want to be able to go to glory. We want to be able to see the eternal preparation that has been made for us. And what we see as we look in Hebrews chapter 9 in these passages that Steve read was there's certainly a lot of things that the Lord has done to make that possible for us. There's a lot of provisions. There's a lot of plans that He has introduced, a lot of deeds that have been done on our behalf. And it also tells us that we need to be aware that we have a part in it. One of the things that we find from this reading is here is he says, and it is appointed unto man once to die, and after this, the judgment. So that tells us that there are things that we need to be doing. There are things that we need to be able to do. There are things that when we go into the judgment, it needs to be stated that we have done these things. So as we look at this tonight, one of the things that we want to talk about is the fact that life presents us with tests and also presents us with reviews. It's always a judgment whether you make a disclaimer before you finish preaching the sermon or not, but there will be parts and times during tonight when you'll think that Brother Henry and I have called each other and kind of worked out what we were going to wear to the next date or something like that. But that's not really the case at all. And this is a different sermon, and the passages are different, but yet there are going to be times you say, you guys talk to each other, and the answer is no, it's just one of those just cause type of things. That's the way it ended up. But when we talk with the idea about testing in life, because ultimately that's what Hebrews 9:27 talks about, that there is going to be a judgment, what we need to understand is that our life does have different tests in it. It is full of testing. Our life does have times that we just simply have to, we could look at it as take a test. We're familiar with that. Life's got a whole bunch in them. We took them when we went to school. We take them if we want to have special privileges, like for certain license. I used to have a ham license, and I had to go take a test to show that I could do Morse code and had certain proficiencies of understanding a little bit of electronics. When we do government or regulatory matters, there's a lot of times a person has to be certified or tested for that. The places of employment have work proficiencies. A lot of places now have different levels and different things you could do, depending on how well you've tested in certain areas. While I never really got into it, the idea of sports is full of testing. That's why you keep score, to see who's the better person at it or the better team at it. And tests do have a function, even though we like to say that we don't like tests, we need to realize that they're often very usable. For one thing, they force us to do something serious. That's called study. They force us to take things seriously. Anybody that's ever taught school, I think, would have a belief that if they didn't test the children or the students in class, they wouldn't really take it serious and there wouldn't be a whole lot of emphasis. So tests do force us to prepare, to study, to prioritize, and also to plan to succeed. Tests also have another purpose, and they tell us that life is not all about ourselves. The fact that somebody is able to give us a test says that it's not all about us, that there are other people who have a little bit of control or say-so in our lives. So testing is pretty good. But now, the fact is not all tests are the same. Usually when we think of testing, we go back and remember the days that we were in school and we sat there in our student desk and took tests with our paper and pencil and all these kind of things. But life brings tests. And usually the tests of life come in hard and brutal, sometimes dangerously. I think a lot of us have seen the video that was on the news of the plane in Taiwan that lost an engine on takeoff. And the pilots in in his rush and in the emergency of trying to do something about it, shut off the only working engine that the plane had. So now the plane had zero working engines, and a lot of us saw the video of the plane turned sideways and going over the right across the bridge there and then clipping the rail before it dumped into the water and killed several people. When that was over, the people found out what it was, who examined the plane and did the investigation, and then they went back through and reviewed the test reports and results of the pilot, and they also gave the other pilots testing to see how they would handle it. So tests can come at us in life pretty hard, but the fact is that when emergency decisions come up, we have a very quick window to decide what we're going to do, and sometimes our life or our soul can be made or broken on that time. And the fact is that Christians take tests all the time in their life, and these tests are different. Some of them are pass-fail tests. You do this and you've just set yourself on a terrible course. Other times you take tests and it's test of growth. It's test of you learn. Sometimes you take tests and you come back with the, boy, I ain't never going to do that no more type of result. But we all go through that. So let's look at the ways that we can view our testing as experiences as Christians, with the idea that the Lord talks about being tested quite a bit. So let's begin with our passage that was read for us, and let's start with the very end first, and that tells us that life ends with a great final exam or a test. And I'll be the first to say that we could argue whether or not we want to call this a test or whether we want to call this a written review of all of the previous tests that we've taken, however you want to look at it. But Hebrews 9:27 says, as it appointed for men to die once, and after this, the judgment. The fact is, our life will end with a great examination, with a review of our life, with a judgment on how we did on these things. Now, the goal that we have is not to fail the test. The goal that we have is not to be said, okay, you can't do this because of this, but our goal is to pass this exam. Our goal is to do well at this review of everything, and the question could be asked, why? And that's from verse 28, so Christ was offered once to bear the sins of many. To those who eagerly wait for him, he will appear a second time apart from sin for salvation. That's what we want. That gets us into the situation of the song that our brother Randy so ably led us right before we got up here, because we want to have that blessing. We want to be seen in heaven. We want to have that great eternity with God. That's our hope. But what we need to understand, though, when we go into that time, if you look over in Revelation chapter 20, that there is going to be a pretty detailed review of things, and this needs to put a stride in our step of, in our life, of all the things that we do. If we look in Revelation chapter 20, beginning in verse 11, and there I saw a great white throne and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and books were opened. And another book was opened, which was the book of life. And the dead were judged according to their works by the things that were written in the books. And the sea gave up the dead who were in it, and death and Hades delivered up the dead who were in it. And they were judged, each one according to his works. And then death and Hades were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And anyone not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. So there is this great exam, and where everything's going to be reviewed as part of what we've done with our lives and how we've done it and if we've done it. And this tells us that God understands what we're all about. God understands what we're doing right now. God understands what we've done. He's always had his abilities to do that. You go back to Genesis chapter 3 and verse 8 and ask Adam and Eve how well it worked when they tried to hide in the garden, and the Lord went right to them on that. Joshua chapter 7, verse 21, has Achan talking about how, well, yeah, he found these riches from when they went around Jericho and took down the walls of Jericho in that battle. And he found something and hid it in his tent and asked him if God knew where that was. 2 Kings chapter 5 talks about where Elisha was the prophet and Gehazi, his servant, went back and followed Naaman to get some rewards and some riches and benefits from Elisha's healing of Naaman. And when he got back to where Elisha was, he said, "Where have you gone?" He said, "I haven't gone anywhere." And he said, "Well, now was not my heart with you when you went and met him, and when he did this, and when you did this, and when you all together did these kind of things." So it works that way. And the fact is that God understands what we're doing, and this is going to be brought before us. So when we think about these things, we need to realize that this isn't necessarily something that lets us approach life with dread. But if we look in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 5, it says, "Therefore judge nothing before the time, until the Lord, who will bring both to light the hidden things of darkness and reveal the counsels of the heart. Then each one's praise will come from God." Now, there's a couple ways of looking at these. One of these things that we can look at it and think, "Oh no, he's going to know everything I did and bring it up." The other one is that we can look and rejoice with the fact that the Lord knows what we do. The Lord knows how we've lived our life. The Lord is ready to reward us for these things. The same thing that lets the Lord know what we've done wrong also makes sure he knows what we've done right. We don't have to post this in the newspaper. We don't have to buy an advertisement for him to know. We don't have to broadcast it. We don't have to go around telling everybody else what all we've done if it's been righteous service for him in his business. He's going to know that. And then he says, then each one's praise will come from God. So that works for us as well as work against us depending on what our works are like. But what it does, this tells us that as Christians, we need to set the priorities in our life. Look over in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, and notice in verse 9, this is a priority of our life. "Therefore, we make it our aim, whether present or absent, to be well-pleasing to him." What is it that tells Paul to say this? For we all must appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. "Knowing therefore the terror of the Lord, we persuade men, but we are well known to God, and I trust are well known in your consciousness." So this sets our life. This sets the priorities. This sets the tone of what we do and how we do it and why we do it, because we know that God expects a certain thing. And the knowledge of this says it's not a surprise. The knowledge of this tells us we set things for our success. It lets us know what's coming so we can, in fact, very well succeed at it. But as we look to succeed at it, we need to understand where the source or the foundation or the framework of this testing comes from. It's not a surprise. God didn't set us up with things that we just can't figure out, with things to surprise us on what he's going to hold us accountable for. The worst thing in life is for someone to hold us accountable for what they haven't even told us about or ever mentioned, and it's not that way at all. If you look over in 2 Corinthians again, chapter 2, in verse 9, he talks about that. He says, "To this end I also wrote, that I might put you to the test whether you're obedient in all things or not." Now, Paul said that the things he wrote were a test. The context of this is what he's talking about over in 1 Corinthians, where the church had that extremely disobedient, immoral fella who had his father's wife, as he calls it, where he was living incestuously with his mother-in-law in all probability on that. And now, that's just a terrible thing to have going on in the church, and they were just kind of walking on around it like it was nothing. He said, "Guys, you got to put this fella away for being so immoral about that." Now, he knew it was going to stress the church. So what he said there was that he put them to the test. Well, what was the test? To see whether they would be obedient to that or not. And he calls it a test for the church. So God's commands are the framework for the test that every church, every congregation has. It's the same framework for being a test to them, just like it was to Israel back in the book of Exodus, chapter 16. When we study these books of the Old Testament, what we realize is that things were a little bit different back then. And notice one of the reasons they were different, one of the reasons that God worked with them the way that he did, was for this thing that we're talking about, to see how well they would handle things, and he calls it a test. In Exodus chapter 16, verse 4, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not.'" Now, we hear about the, you know, the bread from heaven or the manna and the quail and so forth that God gave them. But there were instructions attached to this. And the instruction was that you would go out on 6 days and get this much per person, an omer per person. And it would be enough. And it would work out. It wouldn't be too much. It wouldn't be too little. And what this did was served as a test for the people, because all of us like to make sure that we have enough food at home, so we get extra food. Well, when they got extra food, it upset Moses, it upset the Lord, because they weren't obeying, because they didn't trust him. And God had said, "You trust me, you do this, you do it this much, you do this, and you follow it, and you'll have enough to eat, and it'll all work out." But the reason he did it this way was, he says in verse 4, "that I may test them whether they will walk in my way or not." Now, sometimes it's hard to trust God over our instincts. Their instincts would be to, it's a bunch out there, let's just scoop it all up and go in the tent with it. And it grew old real fast and stank and got them in trouble for not following God. He did it that way, for that was a test for Israel. So when we read about the way God was working with them, what he was doing with them was to see whether they would follow his plans. It would work out. They would be able to eat. They would have enough, but they had to decide whether they were going to do it his way or incur his wrath. And they're also the standard, they're also the framework for what we do as Christians. If you look in 2 Corinthians again, chapter 13, we see this idea of testing again in 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5 and 6. He says, "Examine yourselves as to whether you are in the faith." Then he says, "Test yourselves. Do you not know yourselves that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you are disqualified? But I trust that you will know that we are not disqualified." So the test from God isn't a secret test. It's not some test that we struggle to understand where it's coming from. He says, "Examine yourselves as to whether you're in the faith or not." He said that he's given me a way that I can look at what I'm doing, that I can look at what God has said, that I can examine these things, and I can come up with the answer myself whether I'm in the faith or not. So that tells me that as I walk through life, I can know if I'm willing to examine myself and test myself, like he's saying here, I can know whether I'm okay or not. I don't have to go through life doubting my salvation, because at the end of it, he says, "You can know yourselves that Jesus Christ is in you." I can know that. Not by being arrogant about it. I can know that not by being proud about it, but I can know that by being examined myself and looking at what he has said. I can test myself and know that I'm in the faith. And I come up with one of two answers. Either Jesus Christ is in me or else I'm disqualified. But I have that ability to walk through life knowing how that's working for me or against me. And what that says is that I need to live a life with some discernment. I need to live a life where I go through consciously working through a lot of things, and I'm constantly judging this. That's why in 1 John chapter 4, verse 1, he said, "Beloved, do not believe every spirit." But he said, "But test the spirits, whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone into the world. By this you shall know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is of God, and every spirit that does not confess that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is not of God." So he says, if you want to know whether something's right or not, see what God said about it. And when these people come, or anybody comes on anything, if it's per the word of God, it's good. If it's not per the word of God, it's bad. And he said it's going to get us in trouble. If you look in verse 5, he says that they are of the world, therefore they speak as of the world, and the world hears them. Worldly people speak worldly ways. Worldly people tell us worldly things. And he says that here, and you can look at this. And you can go through life, and so God's commandments will be the framework for the church. They were the framework for Israel. They're the framework for what we do as Christians as we go throughout our life. And in 1 Thessalonians picks up on this, the same idea in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, where we read there, beginning in verse 19, once I go to 1 Thessalonians instead of 1 Timothy, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, he says, "Do not quench the Spirit, do not despise prophecies, test all things, hold fast what is good, abstain from every form of evil." So as I go through life, he said, I've got the ability to know whether this is good or bad. I've got the ability to know whether this is right or wrong. And then it's up to me. Once I've discerned it, once I've looked at it, once I've compared it to what God said, then he says, I've got two choices. If it's good, he said, hold fast to it. If it's bad, he says, abstain from it. Don't do it. You can't do it. And that's where our work really comes in once we know it. We still have to decide how we're going to approach it. So God's Word's the framework. We're not held in secret about this. But now what this does is this leads us to understand something. That as we go through life, as we work through this, as we study, as we learn, as we grow, as we go deeper and deeper into the Word every day, getting just a little bit deeper, it says that we're going to be tested. And things are going to come at us because it's called life. And those things of life tell us that we have to constantly judge whether things that come at us are right or wrong, and whether our actions are right or wrong, not based on what I like, not based on what works for me personally, but based on what works for following the Word. And this testing on earth never, ever stops. It's never the same for you and for me, and it's never the same from day to day as we go throughout our life. I'll give you a good example of that. If you look over in Proverbs chapter 30, sometimes we think that other people with other classes of people have it better than we do. They think, well, if I had their life, I wouldn't be in all this trouble. If I had their life, I wouldn't be tempted like I am. And what we learn in Proverbs is that temptation's a part of life for everybody. It's just that my temptation may not be what yours is. Look over in Proverbs chapter 30, begin in verse 7 and read through verse 9. Two things I request of you. Deprive me not before I die. Remove falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food allotted to me. And I love verse 9. Lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. But sometimes the poor people think, well, they live in a life this way where they're just barely getting by and having to do everything possible to get by. And if they only had a ton of money, that they wouldn't have to live that kind of life and they'd be able to be righteous. That life has forced them to be unrighteous. And yet then here's the rich people who are out doing everything there is, and they decide after a while that the riches are what got them in trouble, and so they try to work their way out of the big mess that they're in. And here's the reality of it. He said, if you're poor, you're going to be tempted to do wrong, but it's going to be in a different way than the rich people are who are tempted to do wrong. He says here that if you're full, that may lead you to deny the Lord. He said if you're poor, it may lead you to steal. Well, guess what? Both of them are wrong. But both of these people are tested. And what that tells me is the tests are different, but the tests are very, very real for both people. And all of us are going to be tested. My life is going to test me however it does. And it's going to be different than the way life tests you. We all just have to approach it that way. Sometimes life approaches us with situations that we just may wonder, what's God really doing? Why should we do it this way? Or how's this going to work out? How's Jesus going to fix something following his way? But you know what? What he did was he actually worked that to work on his apostles, where he put them out in the middle of things where they had to trust him. If you look over in John chapter 6, this is where the great multitude comes to Jesus and he feeds 5,000. So Jesus has been preaching. There's been a whole group come to him. And then when the multitude comes to him in verse 5, John 6, 5, he says to Philip, where shall we buy bread that we may eat? So he looks at Philip, his apostle, and says, how are we going to feed these folks? Well, they're not next to Kroger's or Walmart or anywhere else to buy food. They're way out in nowhere. Where will we buy food that these may eat? But notice verse 6, but this he said to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. Well, Philip looks at it and says, 200 denarii, I won't even touch this big crowd. Won't even give them a little bit. Then Andrew says in verse 9, well, there's a lad here that's got his lunch. He's got a little barley and fish. But what are they among so many? So they're throwing things and saying, well, this just isn't going to work with what he's doing. But then Jesus says, in verse 10, make the people sit down. So they have to go out and seat and arrange everybody. And what he's done is he's taken his apostles who have to follow his direction. They have no idea what Jesus is going to do about this situation. All they know is Jesus said, you guys go out there, take this crowd and arrange their seating and have them sit down. So now the apostles are personally involved with carrying out the commands of Jesus. At the same time, they're wondering what in the world is going to happen. And then in verse 11, and Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to the disciples, and the disciples to those sitting down, and likewise of the fish as much as they wanted. So he's got them out working. He's got them out handling the crowd, arranging the crowd, and it's all working. But yet they had no idea and expressed doubts at the beginning of this that this could even work. And you say, why did he do that? Verse 6, but this he said to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. When that worked out, though, Jesus got what he wanted out of him in verse 14. These men, when they had seen the sign that Jesus did, said, this is truly the prophet who is come into the world. They obeyed him even though they had no idea what he was going to do to make that succeed. He put them out in the middle of it where they were working with the people who would either be fed or they wouldn't fed, and I'm sure the people would let them know one way or the other. But that's just the way that worked. So when we look at the tests in the Bible, they weren't always planned things. They were life as it came at them. And life can do that with us too as we go through life. And it can come at us in a lot of different ways. Because when we look at testing as far as academic things in school, usually the teachers, unless it's a pop quiz, they've said, well, tomorrow we're going to have this and this and this, and you need to study that, that, and that, and that's what it's going to be on. But life isn't that way. And the fact is, your next big test, I've got tomorrow on the screen, it may be tonight on your way home. The guy cutting across a lane of traffic right in front of you may be your first big test after this sermon. And then you're going to have to decide how you're going to react to that. Are you going to just let it go by and handle it as the Lord told us in His Word? Or you or I going to get mad and just cut loose with a whole line of who knows what and sin and get rash and talk rash and have a complete fit of anger because that test hit us fast and unexpectedly? What we need to remember is how we handle things determines how we're going to react to that. And when Cain killed Abel, that was his problem. If you look back in Genesis chapter 4, God didn't respect Cain and his offering, but Cain was very angry and his countenance fell. In verse 6, the Lord asked him, why are you angry and why is your countenance fallen? And it talks to him about, if you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door. And its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. We've got to decide who's going to rule, us or our emotions when things come at us in life. And in verse 8, it says, now Cain talked with his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and killed him. He did that because he was an angry man and he failed his test when Cain tried to talk with him. Challenges to our faith can be massive tests. And they can be hard tests. Brother Henry already talked this morning about how Peter denied Jesus 3 times. And it's interesting, in John, when that event was over, When you look in John chapter 21, and Jesus is working with Peter, Jesus is trying to get him to understand that you can't worry about other things, because Peter's trying to push back on him as Jesus is trying to encourage him. And then in John chapter 21, verse 21, Peter asks, but Lord, what about this man? And in verse 22, Jesus said to him, if I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? You follow me. You follow me was what was on the sign last week. You follow me. Now that sounds kind of rude for Jesus to look at him and say, if I say this, what's that to you? You follow me. But what he was trying to get Peter to do was focus on the commands. Don't focus on other things. Don't focus on other people. Don't look for other reasons one way or the other. You follow me. And if you do that, as simplistic as it sounds, it works a lot better. Because it worked with Peter. Because if you look over in Acts chapter 4, when the church was established and Peter and John were hauled before the ruling Jewish authorities, and now when their faith was tested, when their faith was challenged, when they hit that big pushback again from the rulers, Peter looked at him in verse 19 and 20 and said, but Peter and John answered and said to them, whether it is right in the sight of God to listen to you more than God, you judge. So when they had, but we cannot speak in verse 20, for we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. Peter got the idea, just deal with the commands, deal with what's there, follow that, and it all works. And daily life can sometimes just hit us with things that just tear us up. And the testing can sometimes just be almost immediate. You can look over in 2 Samuel chapter 11 where David looked out and just saw Bathsheba bathing. He could have turned around and walked away, but he didn't, and it got him in trouble. Sometimes things come at us, and we're used to preachers preaching on modesty and things like that, and they need to. But the fact is, the world is full of people who weren't there to hear that. And that tells me that as a male, that there's going to be times when I'm out, when I'm walking through the neighborhood or when I'm at the mall, there's times I just have to also have the discipline to turn my head and move on and not dwell on things. David's problem was he just sat there and dwelled on it, got him in trouble. We've already talked about that when Jericho was being surrounded, and the gold was hidden, or the mantle and everything. That was just something that Achan saw as he was in daily course of invading Jericho. He could have walked on, but he didn't. He stopped and he dwelled on it. Not every sin comes looking like sin, but those are the ones that really test us. And each generation will have its own new set of tests. Ultimately, it all changes. If you look over in the book of Judges chapter 3, one of the things that God said there as he was talking to the people was in Judges 3, 1 through 4, he said, "Now these are the nations which the Lord left that he might test Israel by them, that is, all who had not known any of the wars in Canaan. This was only so that the generations of the children of Israel might be taught to know war, at least those who had not formerly known it." So there was a generation now going into the land that hadn't fought those wars in the wilderness. And they didn't know about the hardships of war. They didn't know about the challenges and the fears and the need to trust God. And so in verse 4 he says, "Then they were left that he might test Israel by them to know whether they would obey the commandments of the Lord, which he had commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses." So each new generation is going to go through its own test. Church is the same way. The people of the early 1900s had certain tests. They're different than what the people of the 40s and 50s had as different things came in. They're different as what the 70s and 80s had as things come in, and the same thing now. Each generation goes through its test. But understand this as we start to close this down here. The testing is personal. It's always about the person. And each one of us has to decide what we're going to do with it. If you look in Revelation chapter 3, notice beginning in verse 10, he says, "Because you have kept my command to persevere, I also will keep you from the hour of trial, which shall come upon the whole earth, to test those who dwell on the earth. Behold, I am coming quickly. Hold fast what you have, that no one may take your crown. He who overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go out no more. I will write on him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God, and I will write on him my new name." It's personal. Hours of trials do come at all of us, and they test us. And the command that he gives them in verse 10 is to hold fast what you have. What he's saying is, don't let anybody come and take your crown. Don't let anybody come and take your faith. Don't let anybody come and take the things that you're doing that are right. And sometimes we think, well, all these things are just so incredibly strong against me. No, he's saying that no one can take something from us without us deciding to let them have it. And our decision needs to be not to give up ground on the things that we do and the way that we serve God, but rather to decide in verse 12 to be that pillar in the temple of the Lord. And he says, "He shall go out no more, and I'll write on him the name of my God." Now, the idea of a pillar is, of course, glory, but it's also strength. It's also support. But at the end of it, nobody can take your faith without you deciding to let them have it. And so he tells the people there, this is coming, these hardships are coming. What you need to do is hold on to it and be faithful. Make sure you keep it. And he says it's their choice, it's their decision. And it's no different on that tonight, that we all have to ask ourselves, are we ready for that review? Are we ready for that great reckoning, that great acknowledging of what God has said and how we've reacted toward those things? So as we get ready to offer the invitation song, each person needs to ask themselves, how are they in this readiness for that review, for that test, for that exam, however you want to look at it. We've got the standard. We know what to do. We've all lived in our lives and we have seen what we do. And we just have to look at it and say, are we right or are we wrong on that? And at the end of the day, we can decide that we're either in Christ or, like Paul said, that we're disqualified. And we have to look at it, examine ourselves so that we can know that. If you haven't become a Christian, we can help you tonight to become a Christian. And you can walk out of here knowing that you are in Christ. And if you've been faithful and then fallen away and want to make those things right, we can help you with that too. Won't you let us know while we stand and while we sing?